Last week we started to talk about whether kidsha l'shaita v'kidsha l'yasalavo. Do we assume that there is a kedusha that was retained in the Makom HaMikdash and in Eretz Yisrael in general after the Churban Beis HaMikdash took place? So a very related issue is that nowadays that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and many of us are not faced on a day-to-day basis with this issue of whether or not the Makom HaMikdash has Kedusha. I assume most people in the room weren't going to be Makarv Karban Pesach this year, and most people were not being Ola Regel this year, as some people did. So the question is for us, what relevance does this have about Mora Migdash Bizman Hazeh? So it has two points of relevance. One is, if we would be in Eretz Yisrael, which we'll talk about, maybe next week. But the second point is about us living in Chutz La'aretz and how it pertains to our situation. So, just by way of introduction, when you look in Chazal, it seems that a Beis HaKnesses, I don't know if I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes that a Beis HaKnesses was something that was a non-existent concept until after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Did I speak about this?
No.
So Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz makes a point. Oh, I said it in that year. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz makes a point, and it's a very astute observation. Until the Churban Beis HaMikdash, basically the magnet for all of Yiddishkeit was the Beis HaMikdash. And that's where everybody came three times a year, and that's where they got inspired, and it carried them until the next Yom Tov. Once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and people no longer had the ability to latch onto a Beis HaMikdash to stay connected, Chazal realized we have a problem. We have a problem. The Jewish people aren't going to hold on. The Jewish people aren't going to be connected to anything, to any one single entity, to any central focus. And now we have to figure out how to keep the Jewish people connected. And for that, Chazal, in their incredible foresight, came up with the idea of making this concept of Tefillah B'Tzibur. Tefillah B'Tzibur never existed. What did Tefillah used to be? We have a mitzvah, the Rambam says, a mitzvah midaraisa. The Ramban says it's midarabanan only beistar. What did Tefillah consist of in those days? In the times of the Torah, Tefillah consisted of, once a day, every day, like the Rambam writes, you offered some kind of Tefillah. There was no standardized text that you had to say. Everybody said whatever they wanted. You just communicated once with the Ribbono Shel Olam, asked him for something, and that was good. Once the Churban Beis HaMikdash took place, Chazal realized we have a problem. We have to figure out how are we going to get everybody into a centralized position in order to keep everybody connected. And the way to do that was to institute Tefillah B'Tzibur. You need to have shuls. And now that you need to have shuls, you need to have... The reason why you need to have shuls is because we instituted Kaddish, Kedusha, and Baruch Hu. We made a text of a tefillah which requires you to have a minyan. And that ensured the continuity of the Jewish people, because even though you're going to be thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, and even though you're not going to have a central focus, which is the Beis HaMikdash any longer, you still have that obligation to stay together, because, after all, we all need to rally around Beis HaKnesses. And how incredibly brilliant that was of them. Is it not the Beis HaKnesses that has held the Jewish people together throughout all these years, throughout all the years of our Gullus? The Beis HaKnesses is one of the central things that has held the Jewish people together, the congregation, the community. And the only reason we have communities that are built around anything is because we have the Beis HaKnesses that we all need to be tied to. And that is what we find. The Navi in Yirmiyahu is the first reference we ever have to a Beis HaKnesses. Now, when did Yirmiyahu HaNavi live? He lived at the end of the period of the Churban Bayis Rishon into the beginning of the Galus Babel. So it makes sense. The Navi Yirmiyahu is talking. Ve'ez Beis Ha'am Sarfu HaKazdim Ba'esh. The Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu that the Beis Ha'am, the place where the Am, where the community used to come together, Sarfu HaKazdim Ba'esh, was lit up in smoke. There was a Kristallnacht back then. Says Rashi, what's the Beis Ha'am? What does that mean? The local bar? Does that mean the local restaurant? What is he referring to? So he says, no, the local Beis Ha'am is Bate Knesio, says Rashi. And that is the first reference that we have to anything having to do with the Beis HaKnesses, because it was probably a very new concept in the days of Yirmiyahu, living through the Churban, going into the period of the Galus Babel. That is the time when the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah came up with this new idea of having a Beis HaKnesses, of having Tefillah B'Tzibur. And it's no wonder that the Gemara in Megillah Daf Chavtes quotes from the Navi Yecheskel. Yecheskel was a contemporary of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and he also is writing at the same period in history, and there he writes, Va'ehi lahem l'migdash me'at, which is a very famous pasuk, but nobody remembers. It came from Yecheskel. Imagine, Yecheskel's living at a time when there's no more a Beis HaMikdash. What's going to be? How are we going to be held together? We know that the Churban just happened, or that the Churban is about to happen. It's imminent. What's going to be with the Jewish people? And the answer is, Yecheskel tells us, Ve'ehi lahem l'migdash me'at, nothing to worry about. You're going to be bound together. You're going to stick together because we have this new place called a Migdash Ma'at, which is a Beis HaKnesses. And people looked at him and said, what's a Beis HaKnesses? We never heard of that. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a Jewish community without a shul? There would be no Jewish community. We would have died out a long time ago. And that's why the Navi Yechezkel writes that, and that's why the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Minayin Sha'akadosh Baruch Hu Matzi BeBeis HaKnesses. How do you know that God's presence is found in the Beis HaKnesses? Shenemar, because it says, Elokim Nitzav Va'adas Kel. So again, in the historical context, there was an incredible insight of Chazal, foresight of Chazal, to understand that this is what the Tzav HaShaah is. This is what the Jewish people need in order to continue forward in the years of exile and the years of Galus. And picking up on that, the Gemara Megillah writes as follows. Va'ehi lahem l'migdash ma'at. It's the first entry on the source sheet. And I will be for you a migdash ma'at. Amar Rav Yitzchak, elu bate knesios ubate medrashos. The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to be found, now that we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, he's going to be found, as the Navi Yechezkel tells us, in the bate knesios and bate medrashos, in the shuls and in the yeshivas. Now it seems from the Gemara that a shul and a Beis Medrash, a Beis Medrash and a Beis HaKnesses are the same. It says, the Ribbono Shel Olam Shechina, his presence is found both in the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMedrash, and those seem to be the substitutes for the years when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, the way it's supposed to be. So that is a very complicated case, because the Gemara writes in Megillah Daf Chavav that it's not clear that a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash have the same status of Kedusha. Says the Gemara in Megillah Daf Chavav as follows. Amar Rapapi Mishmei de Rava. Rapapi said in the name of Rava, Mi Beikinishta Lebei Rabbanan Shari. If you want to change a location that was once used as a shul, you want to change it now to be a Bei Rabbanan, to make it into a yeshiva, says the Gemara, you're allowed to do that. However, in the opposite direction, to make it from a yeshiva into a Beis HaKnesses, says the Gemara, that you are not allowed to do. To do a change of venue in that direction is not permissible. Why? Malam HaKadosh V'lo Maridin. We assume, says the Gemara, Rav Papi is of the opinion that a Beis HaKnesses is on a lower level than a Beis HaMedrash. Now, Rav Papa Mishmei de Rava Masni Ipcha. Rav Papa disagreed with Rav Papi. I don't know if they were related or not, but they had very similar names. So he disagreed and he said, no, a shul is much more elevated, much more consecrated than a Beis HaMedrash. Says the Gemara Amar Avacha, Kam Vasei de Rav Papi Mistavra. We believe that the proper approach is Rav Papi, who said that a Beis HaMedrash has a higher level of Kedusha, a higher status of sanctity than the Beis HaKnesses. D'amar Rabbi Shoban Levi, Beis HaKnesses, Mutar La'Soso, Beis HaMedrash. And this is the way we paskin la'halacha in the Rambam, and in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, and in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Tzedakah and Yerudeya, that we assume that a Beis HaMedrash has a higher level of Kedusha than a Beis HaKnesses. And therefore, the Mechaber talks about the following case. What if I give a dedication to a certain institution? And I gave it, I wanted the money to go for the Beis HaKnesses. And now they say, well, the Beis HaKnesses has enough money, they decide to give it to the other part of the institution, to the Kollel. So are you able to say that, well, the person gave the money to the overall good cause, both causes are good, both the shul and the yeshiva, so maybe we can say any extra money we can give to that. Says the Rama, it depends in which direction. If the person gave the money for the shul, and now you want to say, well, the shul has enough money, we're going to give it to the yeshiva, that's fine. But if you want to do it in the other way, I gave money to support the yeshiva, and now you say you want to give the money that I gave for the yeshiva and give it to the shul, that says the Rama, you're not allowed to do. The same way you're not allowed to change a structure from being a Beis HaKnesses, from being a Beis HaMedrash to be a Beis HaKnesses, we consider that a Horada B'Kedusha, so too you're not allowed to change the money that's earmarked for a certain cause and give it for the other cause. So although we assume that a Beis HaMedrash, that's the maskana of the Gemara, and that's the maskana of the Shulchan Aruch as well, and the Rambam, we assume that a Beis HaMedrash is more consecrated, is more holy than a Beis HaKnesses, there's one area on halacha where they do differ, and it would seem that it goes in the opposite direction there, and that is with regard to the halacha that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch and Simen Kuf Nun Aleph. In Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, the Shulchan Aruch writes that a person is not allowed to take a nap in a Beis HaKnesses, so sometimes we violate this. Sometimes we go to the rabbi's drasha and we do mincha ma'ariv on Shabbos, and it's a little bit boring every once in a while. Or we're just not interested in what the rabbi is choosing to talk about. It happens, not here, but once in a while in other shuls. So the question is, what do? I can't stay awake, but to fall asleep in a shul is not really permissible. So that's a problem. The Shulchan Aruch writes, you're not allowed to fall asleep in a Beis HaKnesses, even if it's a shinas arai, even if it's just you're a little drimmel, you're just dozing off a little bit, it's also a problem, says the Shulchan Aruch. That's a tremendous lack of respect, forgetting about the person who's speaking, but for the person, for the room itself, for the Beis HaKnesses, you're not allowed to do that. However, the Ramah says, when it comes to a Beis HaMedrash, no problem at all. You're allowed to take a nap in a Beis HaMedrash. I remember when I learned in the Mir, during lunchtime, people used to go sprawl out on a whole bench there, on a whole pew, and they would put themselves to sleep, take a little nap in the middle of the afternoon. So I always thought it was strange, but then I saw the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to. Again, you don't have to sprawl yourself out all over the whole bench, but you're allowed to do it. So that would seem to be an indication that a Beis HaMedrash is probably on a lower level than a Beis HaKnesses. So how is that to be reconciled with the original Gemara that we started with? And secondly, the Shulchan Aruch talks about eating. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to eat in a Beis HaKnesses unless it's a serious Shas Adchak. For example, in Europe, when they used to have aniyim, they used to have poor people who had nowhere to eat, and they were homeless. So they used to hang out in the shul, which is why we make Kiddush in shul on Friday night, for all those aniyim who didn't have a place to make Kiddush at home. So they would make Kiddush here, and they would eat the meal here. So again, if you have a serious Shas Adchak, you have some real reason why you need to eat in the shul, so then it's mutter. But otherwise, you're not allowed to just do that. So how do you understand why it is that we allow a person to eat and to sleep in a Beis HaMedrash, whereas you're not allowed to eat and you're not allowed to sleep in a Beis HaKnesses? Don't we know that a Beis HaKnesses is less than a Beis HaMedrash? And this seems to indicate the opposite, which, by the way, when I came to the shul and I put up a little bit of a issue that I think this room in the center of the shul should be used for Talmud Torah, there were those who were very opposed and unhappy about that decision or that discussion, and there were those who were neutral, and there were those who were very happy. So you had all kinds of people on different ends of the spectrum. So I met actually with the Mayer family, who dedicated this room, and I decided it's only Derek Harris to talk to them about it. After all, what did they dedicate the room for? So we had a discussion. I said to him, I said to Shlomo Mayer, I am only elevating the status of the room that you dedicated. You're getting away with murder. You only gave a certain amount of money. Had we sold you a Beis HaMedrash, we would have charged you much more. So you're getting away with it. I'm doing you the biggest favor. So that's what they did. In the end, we allowed this room to become a Beis HaMedrash. And now, as a result, we gained also that you're allowed to do other things which are allowed in a Beis HaMedrash as well. So the question is, how do you understand this? Why is it that when it comes to a Beis HaMedrash, we assume sleeping is allowed and eating is allowed, whereas in a Beis HaKnesses, neither of those are allowed? If a Beis HaMedrash is considered on a higher level, so we shouldn't allow it. So the answer to that is, the Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly, because the Beis HaMedrash is the Bei Rabbanan. That's what the Gemara calls it. This is not a place I come to visit to daven. This is my house. This is where I learn Torah. It's not just a place I come in and out, I hop a minion quickly, I run out. No, this is a place where we sit and we learn and we make sure we concentrate. This is the place I call home. And because of that, if it's my home, therefore we assume I'm allowed to eat, I'm allowed to sleep, if it's going to help me learn, if it's going to help me do other things, so that I'm allowed to do that. Doesn't mean that when I'm bored and I have nothing to do, I should come here and just play my video games. It means that if it's going to be in the context of my learning, that sleeping a little bit and taking a little nap is going to help me continue to learn, or eating is going to help me continue to learn as well. So then we assume that that would be permissible. So that's the basic story with a Beis HaKnesses versus a Beis HaMedrash. We generally assume that a Beis HaMedrash is considered to be on a higher level because that's where the Talmud Torah takes place, and Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, that's the greatest Madrega. However, although that's the case, we have these two halachas where the Shulchan Aruch differentiates and says that a Beis HaMedrash will have a more kal din than the Beis HaKnesses. Now, when we speak about, in general, about the Kedusha of a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis HaMedrash, the Rishonim discuss whether the sanctity is something that is endowed min haTorah or it's something that is only midrabbanan. So this is a famous discussion between the Ran and other Rishonim. The Ran writes very clearly in Amar Gimel, Kivin de Meikara Asi Lomar Bo Davar Shebekdusha. And again, what the Ran means is, Meikara, when the whole Beis HaKnesses was instituted, which was only at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, that's when it just got started, when they originally instituted that, why did they institute it? They instituted the Beis HaKnesses because you have to say Dvarim Shebekdusha. Before that, there was no reason to have a Beis HaKnesses. Now the Ran makes a lot of sense. Look at the Ram's Lashon. He says, Kivan de Mei Kara Asi Lomar Bar Deva Shebekdusha. Since when they originally told you this idea of building a Beis HaKnesses, the reason, the impetus for this idea was because they wanted everyone to say Dvarim Shebekdusha together. Therefore, Hitilu Bo Chachamim Kedusha Midivrayim. Therefore, says the Ran, at the same time that they obligated you to say Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu, they also obligated you to have some sort of sanctity that we hold this room to, that we hold the Beis HaKnesses to. So the Ran clearly says that this is only a din midrabanan. This is only a kedusha midrabanan that is endowed in the Beis HaKnesses, and that is something that is a byproduct of the fact that the Rabbanan themselves were the ones who told you to build such an edifice. However, Rabbi Lazar Mimitz, the Sefer Yireim, and other Rishonim write as well, that no, the Kedusha that is endowed to a Beis HaKnesses is something that is midaraisa, which is a little bit counterintuitive, because when the Torah was given, there were no institutions of a Beis HaKnesses, so it's a little bit hard to understand, but he writes as follows. And he says this all comes under the umbrella of the mitzvah of Mora Migdash. Because the Gemara tells us that Va'asuli Migdash v'shachanti b'socham, because we know that the Shechina rests its presence in the Beis HaMikdash proper, and our Gemara Megillah says that we have a concept of a Migdash Ma'at, which means when you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so the Beis HaKnesses takes the place of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, if that's the case, then you can also assume that the same Kedusha that was endowed into the Beis HaMikdash is also endowed midaraisa on the Beis HaKnesses as well. Says the Sefer Yireim. Look at number Dalet. Mora Migdash, when we have this idea of Umigdashi Tiro, Tziva Bihikanes Adam Lemigdash. That is, first and foremost, obviously, guiding a person how they're supposed to act when they enter into the Beis HaMikdash proper. Or he says that part of that mitzvah is also how do you act when you enter into a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis HaMedrash. Sheinayeg Bahem Mora Vikiba, that a person has to have a sense of awe, a person has to have a sense of respect. Dechsiv Parshas Bahar, because the Pasuk says in Parshas Bahar, Eshabsosai Tishmoru Umigdashi Tiro. And the Gemara learns from there, Lo Mi Migdashi Atayare. What do you mean? It doesn't mean you have to be afraid of the bricks. The bricks aren't going to zap you with fire. All it means is, Elami Mi Shehizar Ala Migdash. It means, the Shechina who told you, God who told you to have respect for this place, that's the one that you should have kavod and mora for. Pirish minabori baruchu matzinu beis haknesses ubeis hamedrash enikru migdash. And from the fact that the Gemara calls a beis haknesses and a beis hamedrash a migdash ma'at, therefore says the Sefer Yireim, this is part of that general mitzvah of umigdashi tiro. So he assumes that this is a mitzvah midaraisa. And you look at the end over here where you have in quotations at the very end, ukashem, the Yireim writes in another place, the same way she'asur lehanos min ahegdash, the same way you're not allowed to derive pleasure and benefit for your own benefit from the property of hegdish, kach asur lehanos mi bate knesios u mi bate midrashos. So too, you are not allowed to take your own pleasure and benefit from the Beis HaKnesses, from the Beis HaMedrash. Shenis yachadu letfila lidrasha, shegamze hegdish. That is considered in some way hegdish. Now again, in Shulchan Aruch, there are certain parameters of how we consider a shul to be the property of Hegdish in some ways with regard to Hashavas Aveda. We'll see maybe in another week, we'll talk about that. But says the Sefer Yireim, we take this very literally. We assume a Beis HaKnesses on a level of Daraisa is a byproduct of that mitzvah of Umikdashi Tiro. So this is a very fundamental machlokas between the Sefer Yireim and the Ran, and the Rishonim discuss it at great length. Should we assume that a Beis HaKnesses has a status of Kedusha Midaraisa, or should we assume it only has a status of Kedusha Midrabanan? So a Beis HaKnesses...
How do you live in the Beis HaMikdash?
What do you mean?
Well, it means that it has the same Kedusha as the Beis HaMikdash, a Beis HaMikdash.
So look, it's obviously not the same. Like we started off last week, there are Chaim HaKadosh writes, even though you say the Shechina is present when 10 people are learning, it doesn't mean it's the same presence of Shechina as in the Beis HaMikdash itself. So you have different Madregos of Kedusha. So too, the Beis HaMikdash is obviously the highest level. Beis HaKnesses is what we call a Migdash Ma'at. It's a quasi-Beis HaMikdash, so the rules are going to be different. And as we'll see, the rules are a little bit different. The governing principles are different. But there are some similarities. And what I want to talk about for the rest of the time that we're here is, there are major consequences, lahalacha, from the fact that we assume that a Beis HaKnesses is patterned off of a Beis HaMikdash. And what I mean by that is the following. We find four or five halachas that came to my mind. I'm sure there are many more. I don't know everything. But these are just the ones that I took note of that I think are a little bit interesting. Interesting to consider that the halacha that governs the Beis HaKnesses is completely patterned off of the Beis HaMikdash proper, the Mikdashi Tiro, the real one. So number one is as follows. The Shari Tshuva writes in Ilchos Tfilah, in Simen Memches, that when a person says Karbanos in the morning, now as we know, at a time when there's a Churban Beis HaMikdash, at a time when we don't have, so the Navi tells us, we have an opportunity to say, to recite the Parshas HaKarbanos, and that will be considered as if we have offered the Karbanos themselves. Says the Shari Tshuva, quoting the earlier Rishonim, quoting the Ar Zarua and others, that when you say those Karbanos, let's say a person, sometimes in the morning, very often people see me, I daven at the 8:30 minyan. So I get made fun of very often for walking into the 8:30 minyan. I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning with my kids at 6:30 in the morning. It's not like I just woke up at 8:30. So I'm with my kids in the morning when they get off to school at 8:15. So now I come to shul. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. Maybe I should daven at the Vasikin every day. It's a good question. But right now this is what I do. So the question is, I don't have time when I come to shul at 8:20. So if I don't start davening before, I'm going to be way behind. Way more behind than I otherwise would have been. So the question is, what parts of davening can I start at home? So you'll say, what's the problem? Why can't you start any parts of davening at home? So I always make sure to say brachas at home and birchas ha-shachar. And birchas ha-torah, you get rid of that. Fine. Now the question is, what about karbanos? So you'll say, why not? There's no reason to say karbanos b'tzibur, says the Shari Tshuva. No. Obviously you're able to, but the Evidi can say karbanos wherever you want. But he says, if you're not pressed for time and you have an option either to say it at home or to say it in the shul, he says they should be recited in the shul. Why should they be recited in the shul? Because after all, he says, the shul is a migdash ma'at. So if you have the opportunity to say the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, why wouldn't you do that? It's as if, not just in a Shalma Parmas Lasenu, it's as if I'm offering a karban, but I'm actually offering the karban in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Migdash Ma'at, says the Shari Tshuva, wouldn't you choose to do that? Now most people don't even say karbanos at all. But once you're going to say it, says the Shari Tshuva, you may as well say the karbanos in the Beis HaKnesses, because after all, a Beis HaKnesses is a quasi Beis HaMikdash. So that is simple halacha number one. Halacha number two is, Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva, I don't know, maybe this was popular in Rav Moshe's earlier days, but I don't think it's popular today. Rav Moshe writes that there was some sort of practice that people had, and there was a belief that they had that if you take a stone from the kotel and you put it under the pillow of a sick person, they will somehow have a skula for a refuah. Anybody ever heard of this practice? Apparently it was something that people were doing. I don't know where it came from. So that was the question. So they asked Rav Moshe, well, they say that it's going to help for the refuah. Is this something we're allowed to do or not? So it was a terrible practice, and it's something you're absolutely not allowed to do at all. And the reason why you're not allowed to do it is because the pasuk says, Lo sasum kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. What does it mean, Lo sasum kein l'Hashem Elokeichem? So the pasuk tells us as follows. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to see that the land is filled with Avodah Zarah. So we have a mitzvah. As mizbechosam titotzen, you have a mitzvah to destroy all of their items that were used for Avodah Zarah. So you have to go over to their mizbeach and destroy it, and you have to go over to their asherah and destroy it, and you have to go around and destroy everything. I go to the OU every Friday with my father, and it's a fascinating experience every week. And the reason why I find it so interesting is because when we're there on Friday, that's the only day of the week my father goes, and they basically present him with all the questions that came up all week, and they want him to look into them and decide what the psak is. So the beginning of the day usually starts off with shilos on Hilchos Kashrus, because the people from the OU, from the various departments, come in to ask questions. But then it turns into just a potpourri of everything. So last week we were there, and a guy calls on the phone, who's fascinating, a guy from Teaneck. He's a very fascinating guy on his own. So he calls up in the OU and he says, Shechter, I have a major shiloh, very urgent shiloh. So he says, what's the problem? So he tells him there's somebody in Teaneck who just bought a house, and the neighbor, and he bought the house from non-Jews. And the two neighbors on both sides are religious Jews, I think, either one side or both sides. And they said when this family originally moved into the house, I don't know how many years ago, the non-Jewish family, who now sold it, when they moved into the house, one of the first things they did was they planted a tree in the front yard, an asherah, and every morning since the tree grew, they went out and bowed down to the tree in the front yard. So he says, now you have a frum family that bought the house, and they have an asherah tree growing in the front yard. So he says, we have a mitzvah of being mevar the Avodah Zarah. When do you ever hear of a mitzvah like that? We have a mitzvah of getting rid of Avodah Zarah. What do you mean? I can't just go ahead and bomb Chalila. I can't go ahead and just start blowing up mosques and blowing up churches. No one's allowed to do that. Of course you can't do that. We live in a civilized country. And even in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to just go and destroy other people's religions. You can't just do that. Over here, I bought the house. Now I have an asherah tree in my front yard. So the guy wanted to know, what are the parameters of burning an asherah tree? Do I make a bracha? So my father turns to me, he says to me, where are you supposed to look for this? Like, nobody really talks about this because it never happens. So it's a very fascinating issue to discuss, but it really comes from that pasuk. And at this time On this occasion, my father mentioned to me that in the Heights, I guess I haven't been on that block in a while, but he said on a certain block that I know very well, there was a huge church when I was growing up. It was massive, a massive church, on our way walking from my parents' house to YU. And every time we used to walk by, this church was on the side. So my father said recently he started walking and he saw that all of a sudden the sun was shining on that block and he was looking around like, what happened to the church? And he finally, it dawned on him that for 50 years he's been living in the Heights, 60 years he's been living in the Heights. And he says for the last 60 years, every time he walked down that block, there was no sunlight because the church was such a massive edifice that it never allowed the sun to shine. And all of a sudden they demolished the whole thing. So he said he finally gets to make the bracha, Baruch She'akar Avodah Zarah Me'artzeinu. That it says you're supposed to make a bracha that we see that the Avodah Zarah has been destroyed, but there's a big sign that says, and coming soon is, you know, the building is going to be twice the size. So he said he adds on a hiratzon, vihiratzon she'od lo yibaneh. So he told me he said you can't go ahead and do it on your own and cause any destruction, but he said they destroyed it on their own, so we can add a hiratzon that maybe the plan shouldn't work out, they should sell it to somebody else, whatever it might be. So anyway, the original mitzvah is when you come to Eretz Yisrael and you have sovereignty, and now there's no longer other religions that are there that need this Beis Avodah Zarah, so we have to go ahead and destroy all the Beis Avodah Zarah. And the pasuk ends off, Lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokechem. Don't you dare do to Hashem what you did to the Avodah Zarah, which means, don't ever destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So part of that is, the Achronim say is, you go to a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, you go to the Kotel, to the Har HaBayis, and you start taking stones off, you're chipping away at a stone, that's Lo Sasim Kein Hashem Elokeichem. What you're not allowed to do is what you normally are supposed to do to the Avodah Zarah. So that means you're supposed to destroy their Mizbeach, it means you're not allowed to destroy Beis HaKnesses and Beis HaMedrash, and you're not allowed to take from the stones of the Kotel. So that's, with regard to that, it's a terrible practice. What about destroying something in a Beis HaKnesses? And I think about this often. I don't know why. I often have such a guilty conscience when I think back when we were kids. And we used to... I went to Breuer's as a young child. And we very often used to daven, I don't know, Shachris and Mincha, something in the 5th and 6th grade, I think. They used to take us up to the big shul to daven. Our school was downstairs, so they used to take us upstairs to daven. And I remember there were always kids who had coins in their pockets and who would take them. Breuer's is a beautiful shul and they have wood seats. And there were always kids who would scratch the seats and engrave their names on the shtenders. No, anybody ever heard of such kids? I'm assuming it happens out here also, but I just remember as a child that there were always kids who took different things and made sure not to get caught, and they would put their names all over the place. I don't know, I probably did it also, I don't know. But this is something I thought about later in life, that maybe this is part of the Aveira of Lo Sasun Kein Hashem Elokeichem. Not just are you stealing from the shul, obviously you're never allowed to damage anyone's property, but also maybe there's an added concern that maybe you're violating the Aveir of Lo Sasun Kein Hashem Elokeichem. You're destroying something that belongs to the Beis HaKnesses, which is part of Lo Sasun Kein Hashem Elokeichem. Writes the Mordechai Maseches Megillah number Hey as follows. Beis HaKnesses Nikra Migdash Ma'at. The Beis HaKnesses is called a quasi, a miniature Beis HaMigdash. And therefore, he writes, Aser Lintots Davar Mi Beis HaKnesses. Therefore, it is forbidden to destroy any part of the Beis HaKnesses. Vitanya b'sifri, minayin lenotetz even minaheichal min hamizbeach min ha'azer shu b'losa say. How do you know that you violate this avera if you chip away something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash? So we bring a pasuk, Lo sasun kein Hashem Elokeichem. Says the Mordechai, a direct result of that is, you're also not allowed to do that to a Beis HaKnesses. And this is what the Ramah quotes in Shulchan Aruch, in Kufnun Beis and Ilchos Beis HaKnesses. You're not allowed to cause any destruction to a Beis HaKnesses because that will be a violation of the Isser, not only of Gneva, of stealing from the Tzibur, but also of Lo Sasun Kein Lashem Elokechem. So that is something that has to be thought about very, very carefully, and you have to pay very close attention. I think there are many who are not so careful about it. There is a fascinating discussion about what happens when you have an Ir HaNidachas. So it's a very unusual case that you have an Ir HaNidachas, a whole city is serving Avodah Zarah, and you have to, a whole city of Jews goes off and serves Avodah Zarah. You have to burn down the whole city, everything that belongs there, all the houses, all the furniture, everything. So there's a shaila, when that happens, which is almost never, when that happens, do you have to go ahead and burn down the shul that is in the city also? So after all, the Torah says you have to burn from top to bottom. Everything that belongs to the city you have to burn. But how can I burn a shul? How can I destroy a shul? So that's a very, very interesting discussion. Does it mean I burn a Sefer Torah that's in the city? I burn all the tefillin, everything? So how far do you take that mitzvah? Or do you say that Lo Sasun Kein Hashem Elokeichem means, obviously, that when the Torah says that you burned down in Yerei Dachas, it means everything except for the shuls and the Sifrei Torah and the tefillin. So I did see that Rav Shlomo Amar has in his Tshuvas and Chelek Zayin, it's the only volume that I have at home. He's such a beautiful author. If you ever get your hands on his Svarim, I think he's, besides for a tremendous person and a tremendous Talmud Chacham, he's an incredible writer as well. And he has two Tshuvas in the Chelek Zayin that I have at home that he argues about the parameters of Sreifas Ir Nidachas and whether or not you have to burn down the shul as part of the mitzvah of burning the Ir Nidachas, or do you say no, that's under the rubric of Losas and Kein Lashem Elokechem. But basically the point is, this all applies to a shul because we assume that a shul has a quasi-status of a Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it is subject to the same rules. Number three, the Shulchan Aruch writes about where you're supposed to position the entrance to a shul. So you'll say, what do you mean? Wherever the architect tells you to. No. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Ein poschin pesach beis ha-kneses, ela kineged hatzad shemispalalim bo ba'osa ha'ir. So if in this town, we daven facing Mizrach, because that's toward Yerushalayim. Again, there are other parts in the world where they face a different direction, because however it's going to be facing Yerushalayim, that's the way they face. So, again, which parts of the world do they face other directions?
Asia.
I guess Asia. So which way do they face? West? Do they have signs that say Mairav? Like, we all have signs that say Mizrach. Do they have signs? I always wondered, do they have fancy signs that say Mairav the same way we have signs that say Mizrach?
Australia.
What?
Australia.
Yep. I don't know. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, whatever direction you're going to daven toward is the direction, the opposite side should be the doorway. Why? So the Shulchan Aruch says, because the same way, he quotes a Tosefta, that the same way in the Beis HaMikdash, that's the way it was, the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash was at the end, and you walked in and you were able to bow down toward the Kodesh HaKadoshim, toward the Makam of Ashraz HaShchinah, so too the Beis HaKnesset should be the very same. Some even say, I think the Shulchan Aruch writes this if I'm not mistaken, that the same way you're Mishtachav Eviyotza on your way out from the Beis HaMikdash, you walk out with respect, you walk out with your back to the Beis HaMikdash, so too you should do that when you walk out of a shul. You should show a certain sense of kavod, a certain sense of respect, that in some way we believe this is a miniature Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we do apply some of the same rules. So that's application number three. Application number four is the following, a very interesting pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. Lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz, eitz al mizbach Hashem Elokecha. It says you are not allowed to plant an asherah, a tree, or any tree for that matter, kol eitz, eitz al mizbach Hashem Elokecha. Not only this specific kind of tree, but even kol eitz is not allowed to be planted next to the mizbach. So says the Sifri in Parsha Shoftim, which is on here in number Zayin. Uminayin lenotea ilanu bone bayis bahara bayis shehu over below sase. What does that mean? If I build a house on the harabayis made out of wood, I'm in violation of this iser? The pasuk says you're not allowed to build an asherah tree. You're not allowed to plant a tree. What does that have to do with a house? No. Kol eitz, says the Sifri. That means any wood. You're not allowed to have anything made out of wood set up on the makam of the harabayis, on the makam of the Azara. So there's a machlokas harishonim. Does it only apply to the Azara? Does it apply to the whole harabayis? A major discussion between the Rambam and the Ravid and Rashi and the Ramban. But Rashi and the Ramban are of the opinion that this applies to the entire harabayis. You're not allowed to go ahead and put any wood onto the whole structure of the harabayis. You cannot build a house. You cannot put anything there that is made out of wood, because that would be a violation of lo sita lecha asheira eitzel mizbach Hashem Elokecha. So now, there's a comment made by Rab David Arama. I really don't know anything about Rab David Arama other than I think he was one of the great Kadmonim from the early period of the Achronim. I tried to look a little bit today, didn't really find much. The only way I ever heard of this Rab David Arama is because Rabbi Kiva Eger on Shulchan Aruch quotes Rab David Arama. So I assume he's somebody worth quoting if Rabbi Kiva Eger brings down Halacha Lamaisa from him. So Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that Rab David Arama writes the following. Oh, I forgot to put Rabbi Kiva Eger on here. He says that a person is not allowed to plant any trees or kol eitz. You're not even allowed to build a house next to the Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. And Rashi and the Ramban assume that that means even on the part which is only the Harabayis, not the Azara itself, not the Beis HaMikdash proper, but even on the outskirts of the Beis HaMikdash. Says Rabbi David Arama, we transfer that over to a Beis HaKnesses as well. Lo sita lecha asherah eitz al Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. You're not allowed to have a garden with trees outside of the property of a Beis HaKnesses. This is quoted by none other than Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses and Shulchan Aruch. Yeah?
Would a house meeting ever be considered a Beis HaKnesses to have any self-supply?
That's a dangerous question, because if the answer to that is no, then it means you're not allowed to daven there, because it's not a Beis HaKnesses.
And if it's yes, then if you buy a house for someone that had a house meeting and then knock it down and don't rebuild the shul there, is that considered not
a... So there are a lot of questions about house minyanim. First of all, does a house minyan have the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses? Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion, based on his interpretation of a Rambam, that the only way a Beis HaKnesses can be called a Beis HaKnesses is if it has a Sefer Torah. So just because people gather together, let's say some offices have a minyan every day in a certain designated room, it doesn't make it into a Beis HaKnesses. It makes it into a very nice, quiet room. But it doesn't have the status of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and that's why you're allowed to eat there, that's why you're allowed to do everything there, because it doesn't really have the status of a Beis HaKnesses at all. Again, if it has a Sefer Torah, then the story is going to change a little bit, but as long as it doesn't, so you don't have that. House Minyanim also present a different issue, which we don't have time to discuss tonight, but there's a major discussion in the Magen Avraham, quoting the Mordechai and other Bali Atosas, that is a person allowed to live on top of a shul? So we know many Hasidic Rebbes live on top of shuls, but if I'm not mistaken, the Taz, I think, lost a couple of children, either the Taz or the Magen Avraham, one of them, Taz, lost a number of children. And I think he writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, he says he feels the reason why is because he violated this halacha. He lived on top of the shul in his community. He was the Rav. And he said it was the wrong thing to do. You're not allowed to do that. So again, house minyanim, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, and we should never point fingers and say that's why tragedy struck this family, Chalila. But it's not such a joke. It's not just a joking matter that you just have a shul in your house and you do whatever you want. When I was learning in the Mir Yeshiva, so they have dorms that were built after the Beis Medrash was built, and the dorms were built on top of the Beis Medrash, and the same question arises in a situation like that. Same way, you're not really supposed to live on top of a shul, you're not really supposed to live on top of a Beis Medrash either. So what right do you have to build a dormitory on top of a Beis Medrash? Shouldn't that be subject to that same ruling of the Rishonim and that discussion that the Magen Avraham and the Taz have? Again, a lot of parameters of where it applies and where it doesn't, but it's something to beware of. Before you open a shul in your house, wouldn't be so quick to run to do that. And besides the fact that I think it pulls people away from Berov HaMadras Melech, you're giving people an opportunity to violate a very clear-cut halacha. It's clear that when you have a shul that has many people davening together, you're supposed to daven there. You're not supposed to make little breakaway minyanim with 10 people at a time, even though it's more convenient. So again, if it's raining and it's very cold outside and you need to have a minyan that's closer, otherwise people aren't going to come, or you have a sick person who needs a minyan in his house, different story. But stam for a person to have a minyan in the house all the time, it's something that's very, very questionable. So anyway, this issue over here about having a garden around the property of a shul is something that's very problematic. Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes it from Rav David Arama, and he just leaves it off like that. So that's a very problematic statement. Do we assume that Rav David Arama is correct? Do we really transfer all the halachas from a Beis HaMikdash to a Beis HaKnesses that far? Do we say that even a tree is not allowed to be planted outside of a shul? So the Netziv has in his tshuva back and forth, he vacillates about whether or not we should accept this. And other Acharonim also, the Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger has in the Binyan Sion, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't, he's not sure about it. And one of the major questions that they have is, well, if you're going to accept this ruling, then you have a major problem. How do we have benches in a shul? How do we have pews that are screwed into the floor? So again, if you have just the table on the floor here, that's not a problem. It's not losit alecha, it's not built into, it's not attached to the ground. But once you have a pew that is drilled into the ground, how can you have a shul filled with pews? How can you have a shul that has wood structure in it, which many shuls have? Isn't that a violation of losita lecha asher kol eitz? So this is the Acharonim have major problems with this assumption that Rabbi Akiva Eiger makes and this issue that he raises. And they say, look, how far do we have to go with this? It's a good question. They point out that the Yerushalmi mentions, what happens when you have hakel? So you have millions and millions of Jews coming to the Beis HaMikdash. You have men and women and children. Everybody's coming at once. So the Gemara says they used to build an Achsadra, I think the Gemara calls it. They used to build a... Is that what it's called? What? The Gemara in the end of Sukkah says that they used to build a... Basically like a walkway on top. A balcony. That all the women were able to go upstairs. And this way there was not a problem of mingling at all. So the question is, what happens when Hakel falls out on Shabbos? What happens when that day falls out on Shabbos? What do we do? So what's the question? What's the problem? So the Gemara says, the Yerushalmi writes, they used to push it off till Sunday. Why they push it off till Sunday? What would be the violation if you did it on Shabbos? So one opinion is because part of the ceremony is you have to blow shofar. It's not just reading from the Sefer Torah. You have to do Tkiya shofar, and we know tkiya shofar is a malacha. You're not allowed to blow the shofar. I'm sorry, the Gemara says it's a chachma veina malacha, whatever, but it's something that we don't do on Shabbos. Same way, Roshana Shechalis b'Shabbos, we generally don't, so too, they didn't blow shofar on Shabbos either. Fine, that's the first opinion. Second opinion is, no, the reason why they couldn't do it is because they would have had to build these big balconies. So, ask the Gemara, so do it before Shabbos. Not going to do the Malach on Shabbos and build it on Shabbos, so do it Erev Shabbos. What was the problem? Problem is, when you make something of that nature, that's losita lecha shera kolaitz. That would be a violation of putting up a structure that's going to be left there for more than 24 hours. If it's only there temporarily, it's like a table in the shul, it's not attached. If you just put it up one day, you're going to take it out right after the celebration is one thing. But over here, where you put it up before Shabbos, and you're going to have to leave it up for more than 24 hours, you're going to have to leave it there until after Shabbos is over, the Yerushalmi says, that would be a violation of the Yisr of losita lecha shera. And that's why when you had a situation like that, they weren't able to have the Hakel ceremony be done on Shabbos. They had to wait until after Shabbos. They had to wait to do it on Sunday in order to build that beautiful balcony that had to be built. But what you see from that is that in the Beis HaMikdash itself, you're not allowed to build a structure at all, even a balcony, which is to help us do whatever we have to do. You weren't allowed to do that in the Azara, in the Ezras Yisrael, in the Ezras Nashim, because that would violate the Yisra of Losita Lecha Shera. Well, maybe, say the Achronim, we should have the same violation when it comes to a pew in a shul. How can we put out pews in the shul if, after all, that's also going to be Losita Lecha Shera, Eitz al Mizbach Hashem Elokecha?
They're not expanding the shul.
Yeah.
You have a shul and you want an extension to them.
So what's wrong? You want to extend the shul, but you're not going to do it with wood, meaning you're going to do it with whatever.
Wow.
Again, it seems that the overwhelming majority of Achronim reject this assumption of Rabbi Kiva Eiger, but the whole way where it starts is from the fact that a Beis HaKnesses has to follow the rules of a Beis HaMikdash. The question is, how literally do we take that statement? When we say that a Beis HaKnesses is a Mikdash Ma'at, how far do we go with that? And one final example, I see it's almost 10 o'clock, one final example is something that's fascinating. This Techemet has a discussion which we will think is only, I don't know, it's something we've never heard of. It's very surprising probably to most of us, and that is, are you able to install a heating system in a shul? So you say, what kind of question is that? If we don't have heat, nobody's going to come to shul. Says Techemet, of course they're going to come to shul. It will make shul more comfortable, but maybe you're not allowed to do it. Why are you not allowed to do it? So this Techemet surprisingly writes that many, many Rov HaPoskim, he says, that he asked, Rov HaPoskim that he was aware of, said, you're not allowed to do it. You can't have a heating system in the shul. Why can't you have a heating system in the shul? What's wrong? So they explain the following. Rav Meir Shapiro, when he became the Rav of Pietrikov, Rav Meir Shapiro was the Rosh Hashiva in Chachmei Lublin, and he was the founder of the Daf Yomi. So when he became the Rav in Pietrikov, so he came to the shul and a big fight broke out. They asked the Rav, the first shot that they asked him was, look, it's freezing in this community. I don't know where Pietrikov is, but I assume it was cold, and it was the winter. They told him, we'd like to install a heating system. They just came out with this new invention of a heater. And we want to, I don't know if they came with a heater or they had a fireplace, whatever it was, they wanted to put a heater into the shul. So Meir Shapiro said, look, I don't know what to do. This is my first day on the job. What's, you're quartering me? You're trying to get me to do something I shouldn't do? I don't know what to do. So he handed off the shiloh to the Charkov Rebbe. Why he handed it off to him, I have no idea. He obviously held he was a big Talmud Chacham. Meir Shapiro wasn't bad himself, but he handed it off to somebody else. So they discussed the issue, and the Charkov Rebbe said, absolutely, yes, you're not allowed to do it. Meir Shapiro said, why would it be Usser? So they were discussing back and forth. So Meir Shapiro said, now I realize why it's Usser. Because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin the following. Every once a year you have to have a convening of a Bezdin to get together to figure out, is this year going to be an Ibr Shana? Is it going to be an Ibr Yar? Is it going to be just a Shana Pshuta? Is it going to be a regular year without an extra month of Adar? So the Gemara says, who qualifies to be on that Bezdin to decide whether or not this year is going to be an Ibr Yar or not? So the Gemara says, most people could qualify except for a Kohen Gadol. He doesn't qualify for this decision about whether or not we should be Ma'abed Hashanah. Why? Because he's biased. Why is he biased? Says the Gemara, because Yom Kippur is a very busy day for him. And Yom Kippur, he has to walk around, go in the mikveh, out of the mikveh, in the mikveh, out of the mikveh, and he's going to be getting dressed and undressed, and he's going to be cold. And if he's going to be involved in this decision about whether he should be Ma'abed Hashanah, he's going to say, don't be Ma'abed Hashanah. If you're Ma'abed Hashanah, then Yom Kippur is going to be 1 month later. It's going to be colder. It's going to be November already. I don't want that to happen. I want Yom Kippur to be earlier, says the Gemara. Therefore, Kohen Gadol is disqualified from the equation. He's not allowed to be in the Bezdin because we're afraid maybe he's going to have a biased opinion about whether or not we should be ma'arba the shana. As for Meir Shapiro, what do you mean he's going to be biased? Just put a heating system in the Beis HaMikdash. What's the problem? He's not going to be biased. He's very warm. You have a heater in the mikvah. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. They used to have a heated mikvah somehow. So you have a heated Beis HaMikdash also. The stone floor in the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be cold. He's not going to be freezing when he gets out. Said Meir Shapiro, it seems that you're not allowed to have a heater in the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash had to be built exactly so, exactly the way we were instructed to build it. And therefore, since a heater was not part of the instructions, therefore you're not allowed to put it in. Said Meir Shapiro, the same way you weren't allowed to put it in there, we're not allowed to put it into the Beis HaKnesses either. Obviously, the Hashgacha had it that we didn't paskin like Meir Shapiro and all those who were with him. And the Stechemet, who quotes all the Rov HaPoskim who assume that you're not allowed to have a heating element in the Beis HaKnesses, Baruch Hashem, we obviously have not accepted that opinion. But again, these are a number of areas where you find that in Shulchan Aruch or in the later poskim, we find that they did see a great similarity between the Beis HaMikdash and the Beis HaKnesses. And once again, all of this stems from the fact that we started off with the Navi Yecheskel, the Ve'ehi Lehem, the Mikdash Ma'at. At the time when Beis HaKnesses was just getting started, it was a very new institution. It was something people didn't know of. Said Yecheskel HaNavi, stay strong. This is what's going to keep the Jewish people together. A Beis HaKnesses is something that we will be united through, because we have to say Dvarim Shebikdusha, we have to stick together as a minion, and therefore, since this is a Mikdash Ma'at, and since this is taking the place of the Beis HaMikdash proper, therefore it has to be bound by certain rules and regulations that are similar to that of the Beis HaMikdash itself when it was Bivinyana. Okay, so Amir Tz Hashem.